Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Chess, and I've got another nutty chat for you for the dog days of podcasting. With me today, I have Christiana Ellis. Hi, Christiana.
Hello.
And Christiana is a well-known author and podcaster and my co-host from Beyond the Wall.
You know, it's always fun when people call me well-known. I mean, it's just the whole small pond phenomenon.
Oh, absolutely. Well known in podcasting circles.
Well, it's interesting too. I think it's the curse of the creative mind to have a constant voice undercutting any feelings of ego you might get. You know, you might have the ego to go along with it, but there's always just that element of it's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's never good enough.
No, it never is. And that's why when people make it, they struggle because it's still not good enough.
Well, yeah, I think the key is to not, you know, it's interesting because so often you hear about people advocating that you should be goal oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that's helpful in some things, but with this kind of stuff, I don't know, maybe it's good to have goals in general, but if you are too fixated on one specific outcome, you might miss opportunities that would lead to some other outcome that might even be better, you don't know.
Absolutely.
So it seems to me that process focused, you know, not everything, part of it's going to be fun, but you know, you want to be doing something where the work is as fun as it can be.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I also think one of the biggest traps is we set these goals and we feel like if we accomplish this goal, it's going to change how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still the same people.
Yep.
We're still us and we're going to feel exactly the same. You often talk about imposter syndrome. And I think so often people, you know, if they're an author and they're selling books and they've got a publishing deal and they've got everything that they wanted, but they don't feel any different and they still feel like an imposter. I think that that's a very real thing. So do you want to tell the listeners what imposter syndrome is?
Sure. Well, so the basic idea is that, almost completely independent of how successful you might be when viewed from the outside, someone who's going through imposter syndrome has always this sort of nagging sense of, I don't really deserve this. I don't really belong here. They're going to find out and take all this away.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of feeling. But, and I think it's very common. Not just in creative folks, although I think it's pretty much epidemic.
Yes.
In creative folks. But I think it's, you know, it's part of human nature, I think, to kind of feel that way because it's sort of the internally applied Peter principle, if you are familiar with that, which is the idea that you, in business, you would be promoted to your level of incompetence.
Okay.
Which is basically it's certainly an old saying, and I don't actually know where the name comes from, but the basic idea is that if you're good at your job, you'll get promoted, and then if you're good at that, you'll get promoted again, and you'll continue to get promoted until you're not good anymore, and then you'll stay there forever.
Okay, I can see that.
And so everyone gets promoted to their level of incompetence, and so internally applied, it's just this idea of, You're constantly worried that, you know, well, is this it? Like, is this good enough? It's okay. I'm kind of all over the place, I think. But part of what it's coming from is something that is actually very important and helpful for creative folks, as long as it can be kept under control. And that is that inner editor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, when we're writing a rough draft, you have to try to be able to turn that inner editor off, that voice that says, this is no good. What are you thinking? That sucks. Why bother? You have to try to turn that off. But the thing is, you can't make that voice go away completely because then you'll never get any better.
Yep.
It is only your ability to see what's wrong with whatever your work is that allows you to improve it. And so that's why by the same, there's another study that was, I'm throwing out references here without actually having citations, but the basic idea was that people who are actually very competent at something are more likely to doubt their own abilities because they have a bigger sense, a better sense of how to do it well versus how not to do it well, the mistakes that could be made, and the edge that you're on in terms of trying to do something well. Whereas something who is really not competent might think that they're great because they're not able to tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be able to tell what's wrong with whatever it is that you've just written. You need to be able to look back at the story you've just written and said, oh, okay, there's too much exposition here. That character's actions doesn't make sense in this scene. You have to be able to do that or else you'll never improve. And yet it's always that everything in moderation thing, right? Because if you let it get out of control, you'll get so discouraged you never do anything.
Exactly. And I think you're right also that it's not just with creative endeavors. I've seen this about with people when it comes to social situations, that they don't really feel like they're part of a group because they think, well, they're just being nice to me.
Yeah.
They're not really including me. They don't actually care. We're not really friends. I'm just friends of someone else that they're friends with. And that's why they put up with me. And they feel they people end up getting limited by that because you end up listening to that inner social critic.
Yeah, it's very hard. And I can absolutely relate to, you know, those feelings too. And I think most people can. And one thing that's important to realize, I think it's funny that we're talking so philosophically. I wasn't necessarily expecting this. The thing that I think is so important to remember, and this is why it's just generally speaking a bad idea to ever compare yourself to someone else.
Yes.
As like, am I doing better or worse than them? Am I better looking than them or worse looking? Am I friendlier or less friendly? You know, it's just not helpful because you can never know 100% of what's going on in that person's life. So just because they seem like they've got everything together, for all you know, it is a Disney World facade. You know, like, I don't know if you, a lot of people haven't been backstage at Disney World. I have been because I was on a band trip there where we played in a parade thing.
Cool.
It was cool. But one of the things that we learned is that a lot of the scenery in Disney World, it is perfectly calibrated and constructed so that from anywhere in the park, it looks perfect. And it goes no further than that. So basically, anything that is just out of any line of sight that you could have from in the park, like that mountain's hollow on the other side, mm-hmm. and you know, there's no inside of that building and all of that stuff, because it is a constructed facade. And that's not what's really back there.
Yeah.
And that's true with people too, because someone, you know, and this is something I try to remind myself of most often when someone is mean. Mm. Like the other day I was in the car and I started to get in one lane. I realized I needed to be in the other lane. And so I kind of got over and I really wasn't even aware of cutting anyone off, but I guess this guy behind me felt otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just drives by on one side and he says, "You're driving like a moron." And I'm like, okay. So I was just thinking to myself though, what is going on in this guy's life that he was so angry about such a trivially minor inconvenience?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so on the one hand, I could get mad back and say, well, that's not cool. This guy's a jerk. And you know, he's probably mean to his other friends and like nobody likes him. And I could get all schadenfreude about it or something like that. But instead, I'm just fascinated because I'm thinking, well, you know what? I get mad when I'm driving sometimes too. I think driving kind of tends to bring out the worst in us because, you know, it's harder to see the other drivers as people because you see the car, right?
Not and you person. Only see what they did to you recently. You don't see them giving all the extra space and letting people in front of them beforehand. You only see that, oh, he cut me off there.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what I think part of it is, and this is actually something that just occurred to mm-hmm. me. A lot of times when we're driving, especially when it's a route that we do all the time, our brains kind of shift into automatic. And this is something that we're generally not very conscious of or aware of when it happens, but it's obvious that it does when you think about it. Mm-hmm. How many times have you finished a half hour drive that's your normal commute and you realize, like, I don't even remember any of that drive?
All the time. Or how many times do you get in the car and you're going to a different place, but you autopiloted to your normal destination?
Yeah. Like, so that kind of thing happens all the time. And I think it's very common when we're making those sorts of regular commutes. Mm-hmm. And so maybe some of that anger comes from when that feeling gets interrupted.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like when you're in that zone and then something happens that made you have to kind of come out of it and then say, huh, what? Yeah, exactly. Like they woke us up.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just my own little screwball theory.
I like that theory. That's a good theory.
Oh, you know, I'm fascinated by like brain stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, actually, it's why it's kind of sad. I don't know if you saw the news, but Oliver Sacks died.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, just on Sunday. And I mean, it wasn't a surprise, really. I guess he had been slowly declining for a while. But Dr. Oliver Sacks is one of the, like, so he's a brain scientist, but also a writer. And I think that's almost like his best skill was less about the science, but certainly his ability to write about the science in a way that's compelling and informative. He wrote one book in particular that I really enjoyed from him was called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
Yes.
And it's a silly title, of course, but what the book is about in the larger abstract is that when we want to try to understand the brain, it's so impenetrable that like we don't even know where to start. So sometimes all we can do is try to say, well, what about the people whose brains clearly work differently or there's something malfunctioning somehow? And you can try to say, okay, well, this person has a lesion on their front occipital lobe and it has this effect. And this person had, you know, oxygen deprivation for their brain for this long and it had this effect. And like in some ways, that's almost certainly when he was starting his career, we didn't have, you know, the what's the brain scan one?
MRIs.
MRI. We didn't have those. And so it was a case of that's really kind of all we had to try to understand how the brain works.
Yeah.
And so the title itself comes from one of the cases in that book where the man in question would confuse things like objects that are associated with a body part. He would like switch them in his head, like with the body part itself.
So stockings for legs.
Right. Or shoes for feet.
Yeah.
Or a hat for a head, say.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened in the event that led to the title was that his wife asked him to grab her hat and he reached for her head.
Oh, that's great though.
Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating book. I really recommend it. A lot of people, although this movie's old enough that a lot of people won't know it anymore either, but Awakenings, mm-hmm. the movie with Robin Williams and Robert De Niro,
mm-hmm.
Is actually about Oliver Sacks too. He's the doctor. The doctor in that movie is Dr. Oliver Sacks because it's based on his book, Awakenings, about the real people that movie's about.
And that was the first thing that I thought of when you mentioned him as mm-hmm. that. And Awakenings is so amazing. And it's funny because I've spoken to people about it and they're like, oh, that sounds like Flowers for Algernon. And I'm like, okay, kind of.
Yeah, but I mean, there's some similarity.
Yeah, I'm like, but you still need to watch it and you still need to, or read the book or something, you know, it's so good. And it's, I don't know, that to me has always been a very important story.
Yeah. But so just the idea of how the brain works has always just been a fascinating subject for me. And that's one of the reasons that I really appreciated his books, because it tells some of those stories in such a compelling way. Like, and you know, there's so much mystery about the brain that we still don't understand. Like, there was a case that was going around Facebook recently, even though it's not a super new story, about a guy who had, I think it was a kind of meningitis and a birth defect that basically meant that in terms of just like volume of brain tissue, he had something like 10% of normal.
Oh, wow.
And yet he had a master's degree in math.
Wow.
And so I, at least in the story I read, it didn't really talk about if he did seem to have any noticeable deficiencies. I suspect he had some, but even still, the fact that he can speak and has a personality and can learn advanced math when he has essentially what seems to be like 5 to 10% of what we would normally consider our required brain tissue.
Mm-hmm.
I do not understand how that could be.
It's
fascinating, but boy, who knows?
And it's one of the things where, you know, for years there was the belief that people only use 10% of their brain, which the big defense was, if we only use 10% of our brain, why do we lose brain capacity when we have brain injuries? But then here we've got somebody who had only 10%. Mm-hmm. Brain mass, although I don't know the story in question, but maybe it was more densely wired or something.
I think it must have been. But one of the things is that it's interesting because despite superficially almost seeming like it would go the other way, his story almost makes that whole 10% myth even more nonsense.
Yeah.
Because what it shows is how incredibly plastic is the term that they use when they mean that the brain is able to kind of rewire itself on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And so his brain was able to adapt so well to to not having so much of it there, so that it specialized parts that might not normally have been wired that way. And so our brains can do that all the time, and it's all the more reason why we're using all of our brain all the time.
Yeah.
Just not literally every neuron firing simultaneously.
Exactly. I love how different things about like how the brain works, why the brain works, things like, for instance, when people have brain injuries, how they affect them. It's always fascinating. But in addition to that, I also am really interested in the motivations for why we behave the way that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm bringing this back to the whole idea of when we're woken up from that autopilot stage and we get, that's likely or could be, it's our new theory here, that that's why we're so quick to anger when we're driving, because we've been woken out of that state. Mm-hmm. Things like that to me are so compelling. Going through school, I was horribly bullied. But something that has helped me a lot as an adult, dealing with that and just putting that into the compartment that I need it to be in so I can handle it as an adult, is realizing that people's actions are so often not about what they do to you, and it's not about you. It has so much more to do with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That even when people are being mean to you, when people are being angry at you, when people are, going out of their way to cause you misery, it more often has to do with something going on within themselves than anything to do with you. So, you know, the fact that you may have cut somebody off in the car, that's annoying. But the reason why he pulled up alongside you is not simply because you cut him off. It's there's something else going on there. There's something going on in his life that is making him react that way. And mm-hmm. he's using you as an outlet.
Yeah. One of my, I don't know if this is a quotation that ought to be attributed to someone, but it's, as a Facebook meme, that type of thing. One of my favorite lines is, everyone you meet is fighting a battle that you know nothing about.
Yes, absolutely true. And those are great words to sign off on, that you couldn't have said it any more better. So can you please tell people where they can find you, where they can find your work, and all of the good stuff?
Well, I put up everything I do at ChristianaEllis.com. I'm at Christiana Ellis on Twitter, and my name on Facebook and all that stuff. And so all my podcasts, including Space Casey, Nina Kimberly the Merciless, Hey, Wanna Watch a Movie, a whole variety of stuff that is basically fistfuls of spaghetti hurled at the wall. And my dog Luna barking in the background sometimes.
Guest star Luna.
Yes. That all of that goes at ChristianaEllis.com.
And you're also on YouTube with your 5 minutes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So 5 more minutes. That's just a weird experimental thing where every single day I record a 5 minute video first thing in the morning. And it's been going pretty well since January, so I guess it's working. Although it's never been clear to me exactly what it's supposed to be, so I just keep doing it.
Because it is its own thing.
Yeah,
it's really neat to watch. It's definitely neat to watch, and my favorite part is the it's this time in the morning, and like just the reaction on your face. But there's some really great topics that come up there,
and
it makes you think. So thank you so much for joining us. Stay cool, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
He rolls 20 every time. He laid out plans for man to reach Mars and return safely on a cocktail napkin. The next day, it was approved. He always knows where his towel is. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friends.
Nutty Bites is produced at Nimlas Studios. You can find us on the web at nimlasstudios.org. This work is created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported International License. What that means is you can share it, you can send it to your friends, you just can't make any money off of it, you can't change it, and you have to link back to me, my site, and everything. You can comment and send feedback by going to nimlas.org/nuttybites. You can go to facebook.com/group/nuttybites. You can call the comment line by going to 347-NUTTY42, or you can find me on Twitter, you can search on Google+, you can search the web, you can find me everywhere.